Thanks for listening to the Susie Larson Life podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always so honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, when you think about the book of Revelation, what comes to mind? The apocalypse? The lambs? The lamb, I should say. One lamb? The dragons? The beasts? My guest today says that the book of Revelation is so much more than you think. In fact, it's even a discipleship manual for us who follow Jesus today. Scott McKnight joins us today to talk about his new book, Revelation for the Rest of Us, a prophetic call to follow Jesus as a dissident people. I am so happy to tell you, thanks to Zondervan, we have 7 copies of this hardcover book, 7 copies to give away. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. A couple quick announcements. If you're a woman and you live in the Twin Cities area, we'd love to invite you to the Set Apart Conference coming up right across the street at our university, University Northwestern St. Paul. We've got Nicole C. Mullen and Lori Short. It's this Friday, Saturday. You can attend one or both days. Also, if you're a couple hours out away near Mankato, I'll be there at the New Creation Outreach, World Outreach Church, speaking at the same time, Friday and Saturday. Love to see you at one of those events. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get this conversation started. Scott McKnight is professor of New Testament at Northern Seminary in Lyle, Illinois. He's the author of more than 80 books, wow, including the award-winning The Jesus Creed, as well as The King Jesus Gospel, A Fellowship of Difference, One Life, The Blue Parakeet, and Kingdom Conspiracy. He maintains an active blog at Christianity Today, and he and his wife, Kristen, live in northwest suburbs of Chicago, where they enjoy long walks, gardening, and cooking. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Susie, great to be with you again. It's been
It has been too long. I was thinking the same thing. Looking forward to this so much. You always take complex topics and make them accessible and simple, and I so appreciate that. And before we dig into this big topic, I'd love to know, just on a personal level, what's God been impressing upon your heart these days?
Well, Susie, because I'm a teacher and I'm an author, I tend to obsess a little bit over things that I've been working on and studying and writing about. And one of the things that recently have really spoken to me is in the book of Revelation, which is a description of some wild and bizarre and, you know, dragons and beasts and crazy things happening in the world, sort of like Lord of the Rings or Where the Wild Things Are by Morris Sendak. Is in the middle of all this, sort of the theory of the Christian life comes so clear when John teaches his churches, the 7 churches in Western Asia Minor, to worship God. And in the book, and it depends how you count, some people find a lot more than I do, there are 8 or 9 prominent poetic sections that we often refer to as songs, and that in some ways are very much like the spirituals of the African-American tradition. For instance, in Revelation 12, right in the middle of this story about the woman and the dragon, which is really quite a complex and dramatic scene, the way to respond to this bad story of the dragon going after the woman is, "Now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Messiah. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been hurled down. The dragon has been defeated. They triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives much, so much as to shrink from death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has gone down to you. He is filled with fury because he knows that his time is short." Most people refer to these as songs, Susie. Think of singing a song like that.
No.
when you are suffering under the empire of Rome and wondering what it's like to follow someone that you claim is the Lord of the entire world, But Rome seems to be in charge, and Rome demands worship, and they demand religion, and they demand taxes, and they demand a culture that is a long way from what it looks like to follow the Lamb. So I think these songs just interrupt these tragic scenes of God's judgment on the world, and they're teaching Christians that the way to cope with the lack of faith in society, the way to cope with opposition to the gospel of Jesus, is to worship God. And that becomes an act of resistance, subversion, and we become dissident followers of Jesus when we do that kind of worship.
I have so many questions. That's so fantastic. Why do you suppose Scripture says there's a special blessing for those who read and study Revelation? Is it because of that? Because we start to, in the middle of the apocalypse and all the imagery, we get a vision for what it is to live in our own Babylon?
You know, I've never been asked this question. I think the special blessing is that they know the way of God in this world cannot be equated with the way of Rome, the way of the empire, the way of power. They see what other people don't see and understand what other people can't comprehend. I think that's the blessing of the book, that they know what otherwise could not be known.
Well, you've got a full plate and a very busy life. So how did the inspiration, I mean, I know the inspiration came from the Lord, but how was the idea birthed in your heart that you thought, I'm going to tackle the book of Revelation? Tell me what happened there.
Okay. When I was in high school, I don't know if we're the same age, but I do know this, that I was reading Salem Kurban when I was in high school. It was about the time Hal Lindsey's late great Planet Earth came out. So I'm dating myself to the early 70s. And it was a fascinating explanation, which fit with my youth pastor who loved the book of Revelation. And it fit with my pastor who was teaching about the book of Revelation, my parents, the books on my dad, who was on his shelf. He was a Sunday school teacher. It was very speculative. It made me think for sure. I'll never forget a sermon that I heard that for sure the Lord would come back. I think it was 1980. And I was in high school and I said something. This was the prediction on the basis of Israel becoming a nation and the fig tree in the book of Matthew. And I went to my youth pastor and I said, do you think I should go to college? And he said, yeah, just in case these people are wrong, but I think they're right. Well, here it is, more than 40 years later, and we're still here. And I'm really glad that I listened to my college teacher. But I grew up with that. And then in college, I studied it. I began to debate little things. But I went through a period where I just thought the book of Revelation was being misread by so many people that I largely ignored it. I would get to teach on it occasionally in classes where I taught, but it usually be one or two lectures. And so I didn't get into it that much. But a few years ago, I said to myself, I'm going to put together all the things I've been teaching and reading about. And so I told the seminary that I wanted to teach a course on the book of Revelation. Well, lo and behold, I had 60 students showed up, and it was fun. And I worked through the whole thing with my co-author, who was a student of mine, who's now doing a PhD. His name is Cody Matchett. And so that's sort of the birth of it. But all along the way, I was disappointed with how the dispensational approach was reading the book of Revelation and how it fostered speculation about Israel and Russia. And, you know, the United States always wins. And is it called the Left Behind series? It's so much about the Chicago suburbs. It's just kind of weird. It makes us think that it's all about us, but there are a lot of Christians in the world that aren't in the United States. So I wanted to put this stuff together, and that's what happened. We got Revelation for the rest of us.
Wow. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk about lordship and The idea, what does that look like for a believer? Do we understand lordship? Do we understand that we have a king? Because you say we've not sufficiently taught, preached, or lived, or even required the lordship of the Lamb overall. Instead, we've bowed down before the powers of Babylon. That's a big statement. I think it's worth some time. Talking to Scott McKnight, his book is Revelation for the Rest of Us, a prophetic call to follow Jesus as a dissident people. We'll talk about that word dissident, too. What does that mean for us? Is there an invitation in Scripture there to be a dissident people? We'll unpack all of that when we come back. Scott McKnight's my guest. If you want in on the drawing, 7 copies today. Super excited about that. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. Back in a minute. So here's a question for you. What do you love about Faith Radio? Has a particular show, something you've heard, changed the way you think and the way you pray? We would love to hear from you. Your story can encourage others and will glorify God. And you know what? It encourages us too. So share what you love about Faith Radio by calling toll-free 877-933-2484. Leave a message today. We sure appreciate you. Thanks for tuning into Susie Larson Live, talking to our friend Scott McKnight, who's written a new book titled Revelation for the Rest of Us, a prophetic call to follow Jesus as a dissident disciple. It's a hardcover book. We've got 7 copies to give away. So thrilled about that. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. And Scott, you write this, and I'd love for you to unpack this some more. We have not sufficiently taught, preached, lived, and required the lordship of the Lamb overall. I just want you to think about that, friends. How often do you hear about lordship, that we have a king? Have we taught about it, preached about it, lived it, called for it? Instead, we've bowed down before the powers of Babylon. Wow, I just don't want to rush through that. So unpack that if you would.
Well, yes. We have to understand how the book of Revelation is constructed. It's telling us that there is a place called Babylon. And Babylon became, in the Jewish world, a word used for empires, tyrants, kingdoms that were oppressing the people of God. And John believed that a Christian was someone who lived like Jesus by following Jesus. Here's a disappointment for me at times with people who read the book of Revelation. It becomes who is going to do what in the book of Revelation, which nation, which leader, is Putin, the Antichrist, etc., that sort of thing. And it leads towards, I would call, a Christian life of escape, and it's all about the future. In other words, we won't have to worry about this stuff. We'll be gone because of the rapture. That's pretty
standard. So you're saying we're kind of speculating for fun, but we're not really getting super involved with it because we don't think it really involves us?
I really believe that. It's sort of, it's almost bizarre, ethereal stuff out there in the future with all these wild things. But this whole book is written to Christians who are struggling because of Rome, and they are experiencing Rome as a place where their God is not worshiped and other gods are, where opulence, if you read Revelation 17 about Babylon, I often tell my students, you have to learn to read this book a little bit backwards. Start in chapter 17 so that you get a feel for Rome and the world that was shaping the Christians in ways that they didn't want to be shaped, and it was challenging them. It was a world of opulence where all the goods of the whole world were on ships heading for Rome, and Rome was full of this opulence. It was murderous. If they needed grain, they would go murder people. They would go into war with the country, like Julius Caesar goes off to what we would call France today and conquers people. And it's about image. Everywhere people went in their major cities, there were images of Rome, of the gods of Rome, the emperors of Rome. And so it was all the time you're being reminded of Rome. It's like Turnar's stop signs and street signs into images and statues of the Roman Empire. It was full of militarism. I mean, Rome was an efficient machine of violence. And the result, and this has always been sad to me, I remember there's some classic authors in the ancient world who wrote about this, is they would conquer a nation and then they would call it peace. And you may know the expression. A lot of people do, Pax Romana. It was economic exploitation. They would conquer a country and then they would tax it and they would get what's best, your olive oil, your grapes, your wines, your gold, your silver, whatever. And one of the big words is they were arrogant. They just thought they were the end of the world, the king of the world, that they could control everything. And all of it all together, it just sounds like domination. And the question is, how do you live when that's the world in which you're living? And John said, the one who is conquered is the one who was slaughtered as a lamb. And he conquered with the word out of his mouth. And the true Christian life is the life that is lived like the lamb. And it is not passive. It is not hiding. It's not withdrawing. One of the big expressions is the word of their testimony. This is the word of witnessing through life and word to the lordship of Jesus, that he is the world's true king. And the word faith, as my friend Matt Bates has written, can also be translated as allegiance. So we are calling people to be allegiant to the king of this world, Jesus. But this king is unlike any king. You have the marvelous vision in Revelation 4 and 5, where John sees a lot like the Lion of Judah, and the next thing you know, the lion is a lamb. And the way of Rome, in a sense, is the lion way. And the way of Jesus is the way of a lamb. And we are called to be witnesses. We may suffer for it. We may experience opposition, rejection, job losses, job demotions. But we are called to witness to the way of the lamb. And that's what it means to follow Jesus as the Lord when you live in an empire.
Wow. You said in the book of Revelation, John instructs the seven churches of Western Asia Minor on how to live as Christian dissidents in an empire racked by violence, power, exploitation, and arrogance. Follow the way of the Lamb thumps the drumbeat of this book. Well, it sure makes you look at Revelation in a whole different context when you say, you know, jump ahead and get a context of Babylon, of Rome, of that oppression, and then how then shall we live? And you describe a dissident as a person of hope, someone who imagines a better future world, and then they begin to embody that world in the present. Say more, if you would.
Well, I mean, you electrify me when you use that word imagination. This is something I found, Susie, to be really important to the, I call these people the skinny jeans generation, but now I don't know what people wear. I know, I think it's changed. But the book of Revelation, when we read it in a flat-footed, literal way, just gets kind of weird and bizarre. But when you let your mind go where those images go, as we've learned in reading the Chronicles of Narnia or Lord of the Rings, or as children in reading things like Where the Wild Things Are, those images do things to you. They electrify your imagination, and you begin to imagine a battle in this world. It's cosmic. There's beasts and there's dragons and there's, I call them wild things. There's people who are against us. So those look pretty normal. But the lamb has been slaughtered. He's on this great white horse. All these battles that are going on just remind me of the sort of things that you read in fiction. And that's what happens when you read Revelation well. You let those images take you where they go rather than trying to identify what they might be and speculate about when it might happen, and whether the rapture is coming, and how many years in the tribulation, and is the rapture at the beginning, in the middle, at the end, and when does the millennium fit? All that sort of thing seems to preoccupy readers of the book of Revelation when John was trying to motivate Christians in Western Asia Minor to follow Jesus in very difficult circumstances. Susie, one time I had a student who was a pastor of some 20 churches in Yugoslavia in the communist era. And I said to him, what's the favorite book of the Christians in your churches? This is in a seminary class. And he said, the book of Revelation. I said, why? He said, it teaches us how to live. It wow. teaches us hope that someday justice will come, because we can't experience it, and we're a small minority. We're only a few people. But he said, we know that someday Jesus will rule. That is how to read the book of Revelation.
Wow. We'll get to it a little bit later, but one of the principles you talk about when approaching Revelation is not to be a spectator. And you've really hit something here, because I think if we approach Revelation with kind of almost having fun speculating, and for some it's not fun, they get into heated debates and even divide in relationships over pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib. It's so sad. And then, you know, for those who say, well, I'm not going to be here anyway, is to disengage with the book.
Yes.
But, you know, sure. Again, we'll talk about this more on the other side of the break, but the idea of entering in and discerning times that we're in that are Babylon-like, you know, systems
yes.
that are much like what are described, and take some ownership here to say, then how shall I live? Because don't you sense,
yes.
we just got a couple minutes before break, but if you are reading as a spectator, you do absolve yourself a little bit from responsibility of being, you know, a nonviolent witness, so to speak, of the Lamb.
Yes, totally. I think that's what has happened. I know it's happened to me. I've enjoyed the debates about when the rapture is and whether in Revelation there is a rapture, which I don't think there is. And, you know, is it mid-trib or post-trib or pre-trib? Those are fun debates, but you're right. They exonerate us from listening to the text to ask, how do I live as a follower of this Lamb in a world that is opposed to my faith? And it teaches us how to do this. And I would say that one of the biggest problems in the Christian church today, and I mean the whole Christian church in the United States, is an obsession with politics that detracts from learning to live as disciples of the Lamb. And instead of aligning ourselves with a political party that wins, that makes us more like Rome and more like Babylon in trying to dominate the world, we try to figure out how, as Christians, we can live as witnesses to this world and calling people to follow Jesus. So I believe the obsession with politics reflects our inability and our past of refusal to read the book of Revelation as a manual of discipleship.
Well, I don't even know if this fits as we go to break here, but I'm thinking, you know, the posture of Joshua to take the people into the promised land was one thing. The posture of Daniel, who's exiled to Babylon, was totally different. You know, he was humble, wise, discerning. And yet he did not yield in his convictions. You know, I think we could learn a lot from how he navigated the times as far as
wonderful,
how we should navigate the times.
Comparison.
Yeah. Scott McKnight's my guest today. His book, Revelation for the Rest of Us, A Prophetic Call to Follow Jesus as a Dissident Disciple. If you've got questions, go on and text him in. But when we come back, we're going to talk about imagination. Sometimes it gets a bad rap, but Scott said there's a place for your imagination when it comes to reading Revelation. Back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live. We are talking about the book of Revelation with our friend Scott McKnight. His book, Revelation for the Rest of Us, A Prophetic Call to Follow Jesus as a Dissident Disciple. Got 7 copies to give away today. If you want to dive in and really see Revelation with fresh eyes, this is the book for you. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877 877- 933-2484. We're going to talk a bit about imagination. You talk about like Lord of the Rings and these kinds of things because the imagery is can kind of boggle the mind when you're reading Revelation. I want to read a couple of your quotes and then just have you speak to it. You said, Revelation excites our faith to imagine the victory of God over evil and thus how to live in our world with that kind of imagination. Friends, do you ever think that way? I think it's a great way to think. And here you say, imagination ignites the mundane. Think of the bush where Moses witnesses the holy presence of God. Imagination invites us into a world that transcends our world so we can return to our world transformed by the conversion of our thinking. I love this so much, but you also address in the book the wrong use and or interpretation of our imagination. You're like, I'm not saying this. I'm not saying New Age, you know, whatever. But God gave us a gift of imagination. So maybe unpack that a bit more.
Some people, I think, are really gifted and normal for them to be imagining the future, imagining what can happen. So let me give you an example. My son was a minor league baseball player in the Chicago Cubs organization, and he had worked out during the winter with a veteran Chicago Cub catcher. And one day I was sitting in my chair, no one home, all by myself. And I began to imagine my son getting better and better because this Hall of Famer told my son, Lucas, he said, you've got the gifts to play in Major League Baseball. And I got to thinking about this. The next thing you know, I was imagining Lucas playing in Wrigley Field and playing in Yankee Stadium, and tears came to my eyes. And I realized, he's playing single A ball right now, and he's hitting .247. But imagination has the ability to excite our emotions into hope. And one of the great things of the images of the Book of Revelation, prophetic literature, you can go back to Isaiah, to Micah, to Ezekiel, to Daniel, any of these, to the words of Jesus in Matthew 24 and 25. These images, when they take hold and we look at them, sort of like, do you know what an auto stereogram is? You know those little things, those pictures that you look at, that if you use your eyes just right, they turn into three dimensions?
Oh, yes.
That's what I think imagination does to our life. It just turns everything, it's almost like an alternative reality. We don't have peripheral vision, but we see deeply into something and through something, and all of a sudden it becomes a larger world. You know, when my daughter was young, she began to read the Chronicles of Narnia, and for her it was like it was a trip into an alternative world. She could sense and feel and smell those places. So imagination is required to read this book because images are everywhere in the book. Another thing it does is it gives people courage. Think about it as a text that says to oppressed Christians, someday, as Jesus was raised from the dead, following the tragedy of a public crucifixion at the hands of Rome, so someday this beleaguered small minority of people on the western tip of modern-day Turkey is going to see the justice of God in this whole world. So it encourages people and gives them courage. The third thing I think that imagination does, and you quoted some of this, is that it ignites the mundane. One of my favorite visions in the Chronicles of Narnia is, I think it's in the last book. I don't remember the name of the book right now. And the trees are clapping. And I love birds, and Chris and I love to go for walks. And we have a friend who's an arborist, and she just loves trees. And for me, trees are alive in a way because of my imagination and because of what I've learned, that they are working hard to get nutrients out of the ground, that our grasses actually don't help our trees grow. They actually hurt it. And piling up wood chips on a tree's trunk is not good for the tree, and all these things. But then you've got these leaves. Sometimes you get blossoms on trees, and it just electrifies it. And these trees are alive. And that's what imagination does to history. It ignites it, and it makes it come alive. It's like the burning bush. All of a sudden, we just see something living that we thought was just there. It was a piece of wood. And of course, one of the major messages of the book of Revelation that requires imagination is that it comforts the oppressed people of the world. I've often said this, that my students who like the book of Revelation the most are the students who have experienced oppression, abuse, systemic exclusion in society. They look at the book of Revelation and it says to them, you know, someday God will rule. And we want it to be in this world. And the book of Revelation never gives us excuse not to be active. But it says what is not achieved in this life will be achieved in the kingdom of God. And everything will be as God designed. You won't even have to shut the gates to the city. The trees are going to produce. The rivers are going to be there. Everybody's going to have all that they need. And all the material that Rome exploited from its countries that it dominated is going to be a reverse flow toward Jerusalem, toward the new Jerusalem, and all the goods of this world will be given to the people of God who have lived in this world the way God designed them to live. Okay, I talked too much there.
Are you kidding me? I'm just going to ask somebody to text me an amen. I mean, that was like healing balm for the soul. And you kind of said this, but I got to read this expert as well. You said imagination also comforts the oppressed, the discouraged, the seeker, and the wanderer. When we engage the flood of images Revelation offers us and experience them with our senses, it encourages us to trudge through the deep icy snows of discouragement and stimulates faith in the God who really is the Lord of Lords and King of Kings, even when dictators and tyrants ruin our society. So it's like God is inviting us into an eternal perspective so we can keep walking, but keep our hearts set on Him and keep our hearts pure. And so these three points you say to remember when reading Revelation is it's not for spectators, it is for dissidents, and it requires imagination. If you would, let's dig into the role of Babylon in the book of Revelation. Yeah. You touched on it earlier that Babylon means military might, exploiter of the economy, oppressor. But you also say in the book that Babylon is a moving factor in history. It's both a city, at the same time, it's a history of empires. Say more, if you would.
Well, one of the this is really cool. I just saw the other day the publisher, Zondervan Reflective, sent out packets to what they call influencers. And one of the things they sent in the packet was a keychain. And it has a little leather strap on it. And on the strap, you read these words, "Babylon is timeless." And I just thought that I need one of those. So I wrote the publisher, said, I want one of those for my keychain. I'll get rid of my keychain I bought in Australia just to have that. And here's the thing. Babylon is a city that we read about in the Old Testament, Jeremiah, etc. Isaiah. At the same time, Babylon becomes what we call a trope. It becomes an image of, let's say, a bad king with an exploitive economy and a violent military that goes around and pounds on small countries and takes all their possessions, et cetera, and their material, their, you know, everything. And Babylon becomes in the Jewish world a trope for a tyrant and an empire. And so when it was applied to Rome by John, he was doing a very Jewish thing. And in the history of the church's interpretation of the book of Revelation, and this is where I join hands with, I call them the speculators. People are always speculating if it's Russia, if it is Gog and Magog, etc. I would say this, that many times Christians have had the right instinct to discern in a country the presence of a Babylon, that they see a tyrant for a king who oppresses the people of God, who refuses to believe in God, who exploits economically the people of this world, who is arrogant, etc. Domination is one of the main things. And when they pointed out that, let's say, Genghis Khan or Germany or Russia in the 20th century, or at times experience of Italy, and other people will say this of the United States. So let's be fair with our criticism here. And that is, Babylon is present wherever these characteristics begin to show up. So I believe we should read Revelation 17 and 18 and just start sorting out the major themes of what characterizes a place like Babylon, and then say, is this true of my country? And it will always be true of every country, because there is no country that is perfectly following the Lamb of the book of Revelation, our Lord Jesus Christ. But instead, we have military powers and we have exploitation. A lot of people, let's just say way too many people, get wrapped up in every election because they think if they get the right person on the throne, the power will be in their direction. But the other half of the people think it's the wrong person, and they see Babylon in that person. And that is when we are reading the book of Revelation right, we have developed, okay, I'll use this expression, Susie, a theopolitical discipleship, a discipleship that is connected to God's kind of politics, so that we discern rather than just become partisans of a party and allegiant to one group in the United States or our country, and we become discerning of the presence of Babylon, sometimes appreciating what our country has, but other times being able to be dissidents and critics because we've discerned the presence of Babylon.
Boy, you answered a question that I was actually had in my notes to ask you, because on one hand, we're not to read Revelation as spectators and then to spend a lot of time speculating as if it doesn't involve us, because again, that's just almost frivolous. But on the other hand, I was going to ask you, aren't we called to discern the times? Because there are hints of Babylon in every culture, and some more than others. I mean, I'm trying to imagine how the Germans felt under Hitler, and even the Jewish people, especially the Jewish people, or Christians protecting the Jewish people under Hitler. How do you not speculate? How do you not go, is this the Antichrist? And other scholars have said on the show, the enemy has an Antichrist in the shadows in every generation because he doesn't know the times of the Lord. But I'd say engaged discernment is so different, right, than speculating.
John says there's many Antichrists in the world.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that distinction between kind of sitting on the sidelines, speculating and guessing, versus profoundly engaged in your culture and in the kingdom, discerning the times and humbly really discerning. Then how then shall I live? So that's a whole different posture, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the. In Germany, a lot of the churches capitulated to Hitler.
Yeah.
Just as this has always happened in the history of the church. Mm-hmm. But there are many people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer who recognized what was going on and spoke against it. And he paid for it with his life. And he was a witness. So discernment is one of the major virtues that is taught in the book of Revelation as we understand Babylon.
Okay, when we come back, you did this kind of interesting, not kind of, you did this very interesting thing in your book about you broke it up into teams. You got Team Lamb and Team Dragon, and the characters in the book of Revelation, what teams they land on. This was super interesting to me, even like who the woman represents and the seven spirits. Who do the seven spirits represent? We're going to unpack that a little bit and just talk about these two kind of teams that you see in Revelation as the battle heats up. If you've got questions, you can text them in. Otherwise, I want you to text me the word book if you want in on the drawing. 877-933-2484. The book is Revelation for the Rest of Us, a prophetic call to follow Jesus as a dissident disciple. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, Hi, this is Bill Arnold. I know you're enjoying listening to Susie Larson Live right now, and you've made it a priority to do so. That's smart. I would really like you to listen to my podcast. So after you have fed the dog, walked the dog, and played fetch with the dog, you can tune in to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Also, if you don't have a dog, well, I just saved you lots of time.
And this is going to be a glorious unfolding. Just you wait and see, and you will be amazed.
Hope you're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, having a fantastic conversation with Scott McKnight. We're taking a fresh look at the book of Revelation. His book is titled Revelation for the Rest of Us, a prophetic call to follow Jesus as dissident disciple. As a dissident disciple, you've got to get this book. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, because we have 7 copies to give away today. Just text the word book to 877-933-2484. One of the things Scott says is not to read Revelation as a spectator from the sidelines, but really as a book of hope for how to live in a Babylonian world, because there are Babylonian kind of characteristics in pretty much every country. And he says this, Revelation reveals the plan of God to wipe the world clean of evil by defeating the dragon, wrangling the wild things, and taking down Babylon. It takes readers into the heart of evil, defeats it, and leads us triumphantly to the world's true destiny, the New Jerusalem, the city that flows with peace and justice. Well, a different listener, her name is Susie, just like mine, but she says, okay, I just want to know, why does he want a Babylon keychain? And I got to admit, I want to know that too. Why do you want a Babylon keychain?
Well, it reminds me of the book, Babylon is Timeless. You know, it's just a symbol, to me, it's just a symbol of the message of the book of Revelation that I need to have all the time, is to remind myself that Babylon is here. It's not the future. Well, it is. It's not just the past.
Not just the past.
Well, it is,
yep.
Mm-hmm. But it's all the time. And my graduate assistant at the time, Cody Matchett, who helped me write this book, he had the ability to move something on a screen so that we could see a Babylon moving through history. And then as you move through it, different kingdoms arise, you know, let's say Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin and all this. And it just, as it moves through time, different kings appear and different tyrants appear. So Babylon is always with us. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So if you were to break up the characters of Revelation into two teams, you call them Team Lamb and Team Dragon. On Team Lamb, you've got God, the Lamb, the 7 spirits, which you say is the Holy Spirit, the woman, mentioned in Revelation, you say is Eve, Israel, Mary, the church. I want you to talk about that in a minute. The 7 churches, the angels, the 24 elders, and the 4 living things. So on Team Lamb, say something, if you would, about the woman being Eve, Israel, Mary, and the church.
Okay, well, this is interesting to me. And I don't know if you ever interviewed me about a little book I wrote about Mary, but when you read Revelation chapter 12, listen to these words: a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. Okay, that's not real clear of who that might be. 12 could be the 12 apostles or the 12 tribes of Israel, but 12 is often the Israel. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Okay, now that sounds like a mother to me. And it's a mother that sounds like Jesus. I mean, Mary. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and then it's the dragon, and the dragon's going to go after the baby. And then at the end of verse 4, it says, so that it might devour her child the moment he was born, she gave birth to a son. She, that's the woman, a male child. So now this got to be Mary. So we've got, it looks like Israel, and now it looks like Mary, and her son will rule the nations, and her child was snatched up to God and to his throne. The woman fled into the wilderness. Now this sounds like the early church going to Pella, in Syria, in the Middle East. The woman fled into the wilderness to a place prepared for her by God, where she remained, where she might be taken care of for 1,260 days. And then there's this battle between the woman's children, as it were, and the dragon. That's what the book of Revelation is about. The dragon is another image for Babylon. So the woman is one of the characters in the book of Revelation. She's not prominent in the sense that she appears as often as some of the other characters. But I think this woman is a beautiful example of how John's imagination works, Susie. It starts out, it sounds like Israel to me. And then it sounds like Mary to me. And then it sounds like the church. And that is like a kaleidoscopic, some kind of a morphing capacity for an image to shift and change as we read the text. That's exactly the way John operates and the way we are meant to read the book. Instead of saying, well, it's either Israel or the church. It can't be both. Well, yes, it sure does sound like it could be three people, three groups, a nation, a woman, and then, you know, now here's another thing. Protestants, especially evangelicals, I've read the commentaries, often don't even see Mary in a woman. Now look, she gave birth to a son, a male child. Now, that's Jesus. Now, who gave birth to Jesus? That's Mary. And it's a woman, so it's got to be Mary. But Protestant evangelicals, when they write on this passage, don't even see this. All the Roman Catholics do. And I think we can listen to our Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox brethren and sisters who write about this and say, yes, they've got a point here. We agree with them on this. We also know it's Israel. We also know it's the church.
Interesting. So, you know,
I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say what else jumped out at me. Just that your fun way of, you know, dividing this up to Team Lamb and Team Dragon is, you know, the overarching story is God, his goodness over evil, winning over evil. And yet, you know, as it goes throughout history, judgment starts first in the house of God. He starts with his people. And so while you see this overarching story of God dealing with wickedness, the Spirit still has something to say to the seven churches. You know, he's not giving them a pass. I often say just because God is good to us doesn't mean he's good with everything that we do. So say a quick word, if you would, about that.
Well, the book of Revelation is for these churches, and it's calling these people to be obedient and to follow the way of the Lamb. And, well, I do break this into what I call a playbill. I was looking at a playbill one day, and I said, hey, that's what's going on in Revelation. But we need to understand the characters of the book of Revelation. And if we don't keep them all in mind, it's like going to a play, going to Hamilton, and only caring about King George singing his hilarious songs. But there's other characters, and all these characters put together form the drama of the book of Revelation that together reveal the plan of God to bring justice and peace in this world through the people of God, even though they will experience suffering and even persecution and death because they've witnessed and told the story about Jesus and they have lived faithfully following the way of the Lamb instead of succumbing to the way of Rome, to the way of the empire, to the way of Babylon.
Well, we've run out of time, but Team Dragon, you got the dragon, the beast, otherwise known as the wild things, all who are inhabiting Babylon, the kings, merchants, sailors, anyone who chooses to have the mark of the wild thing. You really, I think, are poised to write a fiction book on this. I think it would be fantastic. So we just got a minute and a half left, but I would love to know, Scott, what do you know, just as a follower of Christ, what do you know of God and about God and walking with God that maybe you didn't know as well 5-10 years ago?
I think that this book of Revelation has made a big impact on my life. And that impact is given me, let's say, peace and tranquility about the political environment of our world. It's given me a vision to look into different presidents that we have, see the good that they do, and call attention and discern the bad that they're doing. And it sort of gives me a distance from the politics while I remain as an American and try to follow the way of the Lamb in my daily life. So I think God has taught me through the book of Revelation to have discernment about politics and to help my fellow believers, my students especially, because that's who I concentrate on, develop what I call a theopolitical approach to discipleship so that they become discerners of the presence of Babylon in our world.
Scott, thank you for joining us today. Really great conversation. Wish you could see the text line. Many, many people loved what you had to say. We're so intrigued. Thank you, friend, tuning in. I pray you found some encouragement here today. We sure love doing this journey with you. And we'll leave the drawing open for Scott's book for a little bit yet. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to Suzy Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.